Okay. Well, first of all, today is Sunday, the 14th of December, 2014, 14-12-14. And I regret very much that I named Vic Snow Vic Rain, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to me, and Vic must be a tzaddik, and we pray for rain, and it's the rainiest winter I remember in many, many years. When I went to shul this morning, it was pouring. And Baruch Hashem, now it's a little lighter, but the Midrash is so right, it's good when it rains Wednesday night and Friday night, because then evidently people didn't walk around, but when humans have to walk around, it's nishta zei bakfem, as we used to say in Mama Lashon. The demonstration Friday night, I couldn't believe the crowd that came. It was very well organized, and they pleaded with everyone not to make any scenes. The only problem was that there was a police car that came Shabbos, which bothers me, but I guess there's no choice. And the police car stationed himself right outside the Treif restaurant, the Machalos Shabbos restaurant, the seafood restaurant, it's all one restaurant. So when the thousands walked by, they wanted to be sure no one would break any windows. The crowd was there from Midrash Shmuel with the Rosh Yeshiva, and oh, wow. And I was amazed. All the announcements were in English. With Midrash Shmuel, I had a very bad experience. It must be a good yeshiva, because I see a big crowd of Anglos, all English. But I once walked in there to Daven Mincha. So the Rosh Yeshiva's talk from Shabbos was printed in English, and you could take a copy. Evidently, it's, he writes it out, and someone types it out. And I read the talk, Hadminish Gut Gavarin. He's talking about why you shouldn't go to college and you should have bitachon, and that God will provide for you. And he tells a story. I couldn't believe my eyes, that this kid was in Kollel and his wife said, we have children, we need money, you have to go to work, you have to get an education to work. And the guy's about to leave the Kollel and his aunt dies and he inherits money and it solves all problems. Gentlemen, I walked away that what that talk is telling us, we should all pray that our aunts and uncles should drop dead so we can inherit the money and stay in a kollel. So I have to tell you, that turned me off. And I got into a lot of trouble because that year I was the guest of the London community. I spent a month in Golders Green and Hendon. And Shabbos, you know, they led me by the nose where a meeting, and this was a Talmid of mine from a Home Gold. And I'm telling the story, and I told him how upset I was. It turns out her son was the second year in Midrash Shmuel and loves the Rebbe. But so does Zayna Zay. Okay, now, some very... right beneath the store, the opposite the Prime Minister's private home on Azza, there's a park right across the street. That's where the police asked that the demonstration be held. There were at least 5,000 people there. We'll see what the weekend papers say, because the Yediot Yerushalayim already described the demonstration to be and why they're demonstrating, and had a picture of the Treifa restaurant.
So, the restaurant used to be Momet?
No. This is much closer to my house. Further down, closer to Chernichovsky, closer to Shimon.
From Ari?
Off Ari, right around the corner from Ari. It used to be a kosher restaurant, and the guy has two other restaurants, I'm told, under Hashgacha. How you can trust this man is beyond me. I wouldn't give him Hashgacha, let him go to the Supreme Court, and I present the case to the Supreme Court, and I quote from Rakefet from the Silva era, that the Rabbanim in America issued a Cherem in the 1930s that you can't give a Hechshit to a caterer who has a kosher division and a treif division. And if you know what happened in Baltimore, you know what I'm talking about. Okay. Now,
that was the policy here once upon a time.
It should still be. No, the policy here was you can't give a heksha to McDonald's because McDonald's is treif. So they went to the Supreme Court and they reached an interesting compromise that the treif McDonald's are in red and the kosher McDonald's are in blue. And if you notice, all the chains that have kosher and non-kosher, where they give a franchise, so it will say Aroma Kosher. In other words, they changed the name slightly, so you shouldn't make a mistake and think all aromas are kosher. And the chief rabbi accepted it. It's a good compromise. But this guy who himself eats oysters and clams, how can you give a hatchet of something he owns? Who knows what the man does when the mashgiach is not watching? And no hashgacha can be 24/7. Every hashgacha is built upon ne'amanut. Unfortunately, we're much better off when we're dealing with Goyim. The OU has never, ever had a problem with a non-Jewish firm. They've had two tremendous problems with Jews. You follow me? But I don't want to go into detail. Let it stand. Gentlemen, let's get down to interesting material. My Talmud, Josh Schneider, sent me something very interesting. We've spoken about this many times in class, the difference in Psak between the Pelusha, the Ungarische, the German Poskim, the Galician Poskim. I'm citing a source now. Kidvei Hagon Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Chelek Aleph. Now, this was published, very interestingly, by my student, Mark Shapiro. Published in Scranton. Why in Scranton? He's professor at the Jesuit University. He has the Judaic chair. It's called the Weinberg chair. Nothing to do with Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, the millionaires who gave the money, a Weinberg. So he has money to publish. He published two volumes of the letters of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov. Mark Shapiro, or Melech Shapiro, did us a great chesed. Look into volume 1, Siman Yud Aleph, in a tshuva to a Talmud of his, evidently from the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary, Rabbi Bloch. This Talmud himself, very interesting individual. There's a volume that came out. I actually davened next to the person who edited the volume, who wrote the volume, Rabbi Israel Hildesheim, the Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was Rabbi Revel's nephew by marriage. And he put out a volume there, Das Berliner Rabbinische Seminar, 1873-1938. There's a Hebrew translation, but the Hebrew is not as detailed as the German. If you look into page 73, you'll see a whole entry about Fritz Eliezer Bloch, who studied in the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary. The tshuva is addressed to him. Now, this Rabbi Bloch, without going into detail, also a sad story. He had to leave Germany. He comes to Israel, comes to Aliyah. He never found himself here. It's like American rabbis who are used to being in the spotlight, and they come to Israel, and some of them, you know, you have to come and know, at the age of 60, 65, you're not going to start all over again. So you have to come and accept the reality. He went from here back to Germany, and he was a rav in Germany, and I believe he actually died in Germany, although I'm pretty sure he's buried here. But he corresponds with his Rebbe, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. This tshuva is from 1933. Yeah, Chavchet Macheshvan Tachzag, 1932. You know, with the Hebrew English, you always have the problem with the date. So this has to be 1932. And he had a case with the case is not spelled out, but I gather from Rabbi Yaakov's writing, it was a non-Jewish woman married to a Jewish man, and she converts. And it turns out that the Rabbanim from Ashkenaz were machmir and wouldn't accept the conversion, much like the problem we have today, and the Hungarians were machmir, the Polish Rabbanim, the Litvish Rabbanim were evidently mekil, but he writes here, I want you to know, he tells his Talmud, whenever you deal with the rabbis from Poland and Lithuania, I always thought that they were better poskim until I came to Germany. But I see that in Germany and in Hungary, which borders on Germany, and Galicia, which borders on Germany, Yesh lechem chush miyuchad lahorat ma'asit. They have an unbelievable canny ability to paskin lahalacha. And they are all Talmidim of the Chatam Sofer, who is the greatest posek of the 19th century. And then he goes in, he discusses the case, and he says, halacha lemaisa, if they're really going to convert and they're going to observe Shabbat, Tarat Mishpacha, and Kashrut, then you can convert her. But otherwise, you cannot. So it's an interesting comment that Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, A Litvak Bamakar accepts the poskim from Germany and Hungary more quickly than he will Polish and Lithuanians. Again, my comment is Reb Chaim ruled Psak in Greater Lithuania. And everyone writes about it. And there are no two ways about it. And the Rav was forced to become a Posek because he was in Boston. And in Boston, he was a rabbi. Willy-nilly, he had to paskin. What could he do? He was the Rav in Boston. There was no one else to turn to at that time. So, it's an interesting comment. My Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, if I have all his titles correctly, writes about Chicago. We spoke about the Arab. So he says when he came to Chicago in 1997, he was the executive director, I believe, of Yeshivat Brisk of Reb Aaron, there was an Arab in West Rogers Park. And Rabbi Zev Cohn and Rabbi Lenny Matanki, who's president of RCA today, my student, were very involved in building the West Park Rogers Arab. It is probably one of the better Arabs in the country. You have the Chicago River, in other words, you take the embankment and the little wall around it, elevated trains, and a cemetery fence covering, I believe, the overwhelming majority of the Arab. However, Mark himself couldn't carry because he worked for Brisk, and Brisk was not somach on the Arab, as you know. The Arab did save a cabbie's life. There was an accident, and he ended up hitting a pole, and the Arab wire held the pole up and kept it from crushing his taxi. So that's an interesting story on Chicago and the Arab. Now, let me pick up where I left off last week. We spoke about the machleket, what went on in London, but before that we said there was an Erev in Manchester, and the Erev was universally accepted, and I expressed an opinion which I believe is correct. Again, it's a theory. When you give a theory, you have to say I'm 90% correct, but I believe I'm correct that there was no machleket, because where did you get Jews and who had to learn in Manchester at that time? The Rav there was very fascinating individual, and let me say it, I got some correspondence on it, and evidently I swallowed the word. I'm listening, I think I told you, to a tape of Reb Shmuel Belkin in Yiddish, in English. Whenever he's speaking, you can't understand two words together. It's not like the Rav. The Rav was unbelievable in Yiddish and fabulous in English. Now, why you put out a book? I don't know how many of you have this book. This book came out on the 100th anniversary of Reitz. The book is totally not reliable. Whoever wrote it, I don't know, they have there in the book, you know what I'm talking about, they have there the Rav learning with his grandfather, Reb Chaim, after World War I in Warsaw. There's only one problem. Reb Chaim died in 1917, and the Rav got to Warsaw in 1920. So even though I believe in miracles, I find a little hard to accept this as, you know, we can't talk art scroll theories now. And the book has that, and it was never corrected. It's been republished a few times. It's a booklet. They give it out. And anyway, they have an entry, HaRav HaGaon of Avraham Aaron Yudalovich. And in the entry, just what I told you, in 1898 he became Rabbi Manchester. Then he remained for 6 years. Then he took up a pulpit in Boston. Then he was appointed a Rosh Yeshiva at Reitz, where he remained for a short time. Then he went to Bayonne, and it goes on and on, and then it tells you about the books he authored. Now, that machloket, he was, again, I described him correctly. Sometimes when we're brilliant, we're too brilliant. And this is what we call, Isaac, an ibuchacham. Have you heard? Have you heard that expression, Dov, an ibuchacham? And you find this with brilliance. I don't want to mention names. They're people I know. You'll take Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. Here's an example of someone who's 50 light years ahead of us in knowledge, in memory, but his feet are on the ground. You see, Reb Aaron, with all his brilliance, it's like I learned in Lakewood, and they taught me that Yiddish expression, as an amala. He, what does it mean he's normal? Of course he's normal, but he can relate to the real world. That's a compliment. I know other people who have tremendous minds, And they're in a winkel, they're in a corner, nothing is good enough, no one is good enough, no one is fine, this, that, everything criticism. So he was a genius, but that machloket he got involved with, and here I want to just say a few words because people wrote to me, my Talmud, and I haven't read it all, but Rabbi Jonathan Berger, how can you be mate chalitza yedei shliach? It goes, you can look, he, it's an open gemara in Ketuvah. I can give you the source. It's absolutely doesn't get off the ground. Here, the gemara in Ketuvah, dafayin dalid amir aleph. You'll see in the gemara with a shliach litza psula, you look in the gemara. But yes, there was a tremendous machloket. And Jonathan, if you want sources, look at the YU booklet I just quoted. It gives you the svarim that Rav Yehuda Lovitz wrote. And all you have to do is probably on Hebrew books. These are rare svarim. I have a feeling you will find them in Hebrew books. If not, Google and see what you come up with. Avraham Aaron Yehuda Lovitz. Yudelovitch. Now, and here I want to say something very important, and I'm going to get involved in an atomic war in the United States in a few weeks, but I have to say what I have to say. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and Torah is the only value I have in life. You see, we have tragedies today, and these are overwhelming human tragedies. The Torah system of marriage, a man marries a woman, a man chases a woman, a man gives the kesef kedushin, and it's only the man who gives the get. Now we have takanot from Rabbeinu Gershom, you can't have more than one wife. At your wedding, did they give you that special ketuvah when if your wife claims she's Eidot HaMizrach, then there's a special ketuvah because the Eidot HaMizrach never accepted Rabbeinu Gershom's cherem. So they have a ketuvah where they swear they won't marry another wife, and etc., etc. They have a totally different nusach in the ketuvah. So, and that's what Professor Liebman said when the seminary introduced its ketuvah. He said, I want someone to show me that we can't add to the ketuvah. And the truth is, he was absolutely right. At that level, he was absolutely right. That whole machloket was on a different level about, can we recognize the conservative Beit Din? But Professor Liebman was absolutely, absolutely right. We'll talk about it, or we spoke about it in the past. I think we hit it again with RCA when I discussed the history of RCA. I'll speak about it in detail. Be'ezrat ha'notein le'yov koach. So, this is the Torah system. Now, if the system if problems are created, I quote the Rav now, it's not the kalacha that creates the problem, it's the human reality. And you come up with terrible problems. The greatest problem we have historically, which already we have two prakim in the second Yevamah, the last two prakim, is an aguna. What does it mean, an aguna? A man walks out of the house, you don't know what happened to him, he doesn't come back, he went to war, he doesn't come back. I lectured on this for 2.5 years in the Kollel. There's more written on aguna than any other topic you can imagine. If you open up Rakafet Aaron, I think it's Chelik Bet, I have a very important piece on Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan and Heter Aguna. He was known as the Av HaAgunot. Now, in America, we have a terrible problem because Jews in America, maybe, I don't want to say percentage-wise, but the majority of from Jews outside of the Balei Tshuva are sincere. The first generation is sincere. Then you get involved, monkeys putting on tefillin. All they're interested in, Geva Toshev, Anokhi, Mochem, in America. What's America? Money, sex, wine, drugs, wine, women, and song. What does the prophet say? Enjoy life today, tomorrow will be death. And unfortunately, many of our so-called from people think that way. Or even if they don't think it consciously, they live that way. Lo aleinu. The scandals we have had this past year are beyond Torah understanding. It's beyond comprehension. Beyond comprehension. So, you take a guy, he's married, the marriage breaks up. No, the marriage breaks up. I'm against getting marriage, particularly with their children. But okay, if you have no choice, you have no choice. The Torah allows a get. So the guy says to the girl, you want your freedom? $500,000. $100,000. $250,000. So you see, you're in a terrible situation. And Rabbi Rackman, with the best of intentions, tried to introduce Hafkat Kedushin. It doesn't get off the floor. I gave Sherman Hafkat Kedushin for one solid year. I published actually an Amavasir on it. It doesn't get off the floor. Now they've come up with a new idea, Zikui Get. Now, can anyone in his right mind, halachic mind, how can a Beitin give a get instead of the husband? How does it get off the floor? It doesn't, halachically, it's not even 1% right.
One second.
You don't know what's going on. I'm not going into all the detail. I just want to say, their intentions are, they feel very bad. I understand it. But halacha lemaisa, but they're building it in Tzfat. In Tzfat, there was a case this summer where a person was in a car accident, became a vegetable, and it's a young woman, and she'll be in a guna for life. And the doctors say the man can die tomorrow, or he can continue as a vegetable for years to come. People have been vegetables 10 years, 20 years. So the Beitin there came up with Zikui Get. And they claim of Zalman Nechem Goldberg approved it. And it turns out that I have in my possession Rav Zalman Nechem Goldberg's handwriting, a total denial. The Rebbe of the Rav Farbstein, Moshe Mordechai Farbstein, the Rosh Hashiv of Hebron today, it is his Talmud, is the Av Beitin, wrote a whole, you should see what he wrote to a student, very strong words. But I understand that they're desperate, they want to help the woman, and we're caught in a terrible problem. And here's where you face the ultimate challenge. Is Torah a divine system that you cannot change? Or Isha Yashav Be'inav Yaseh, like the conservative movement, when they permitted driving to shul on Shabbat? It was, they look back now, 60 plus years later, it's 62 years since the Tshuva was written, 63, the responsum was written, and they look back, it destroyed all of halacha, the conservative movement. You can throw Shabbos out, you can throw anything out. So the intentions are good, but this is a human tragedy. What do we do? I don't know what we can do. It's like the Rav, the famous story that Rakefet writes about in the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, where he quotes Rebbe word by word with this, you all know the case, that this fellow's in graduate school, an American Jew, doesn't know a thing about Yiddishkeit. He meets this lady who had converted, and she brings him back to Yiddishkeit, and they want to get married, brings him to Yiddishkeit, not back. I don't like the word Baal Tshuva, because I can be a Baal Tshuva, because I grew up steeped in Torah. Many of you cannot be Baal Tshuva. You found, you uncovered what it means to be a Jew. Chazatem lemekorot, to be a real Jew. I don't like the word Baal. Rakefet and Reuben can be Baal Tshuva. From the age of 7th grade on, I had Rebbeim Gedolei Yisrael. So I can be a Baal Tshuva. Rabbi Reuben's home was totally from. His father studied Ramban with the Rav on Shabbos afternoon. He can be a Baal Tshuva. Many of you, I have to use the word, Chazatem lemekorot, discovered who you are, discovered your DNA. This is what a Jew was. How did we survive? If not for Shabbos, we wouldn't be here. If not for Kashrut, we wouldn't be here. If not for Tarek Mishpacha, we wouldn't be here. So, this is the same thing with Rabbi Yehuda Lovitch. It's not that they were overwhelmed. This is a tragic case. A young woman needs chalitza. She's in America. And he's in communist Russia. She ran away from Russia. If she goes back, she'll be arrested. So there's no way they can come together. So he came up with the concept of Al Yedei Shaliach. All right, it was rejected by all the Gedolei Yisrael, and it caused a tremendous heartache, because after you come out in favor of a position like that, the so-called Torah world will not accept you anymore. So Jonathan Berger can't understand. That's the understanding. Does it hold water? Does it get off the ground? It's like Zikui Get, the same thing, Chalitza Yedei Shaliach, where, I mean, the whole Torah, it's open in the Torah, what the Yavim has to do when taking off the shoe. She takes off his shoe, he takes off the shoe and everything that goes with it. It's unbelievable. Okay, I just wanted to answer Jonathan, and my heart breaks for someone like Rabbi Yudalevich. But halachically, this is a tragedy. Ein chinami, there are tragedies in life. And we as Torah Jews, there's little we can do about it except pray to God that there should be a solution. With the Chalitza case that I had, that someone in America asked me to write out that, since he says they're discussing it with Rav Heshi Shechter, with Rav Heschel, and they saw the Tshuva Reb Ovadia, and all that. They all know from Washington that all that came out of this classroom. So in that case, we had a terrible problem that the woman had married in Israel, a Russian woman, and the husband dies, and she now wants to remarry, and the new husband and their Balei Tshuva. And the previous husband left a brother who's head of a kolchoz in Russia. But you see, there I had room to move halachically, because the man she married here had a serious illness which she didn't know about. So right away that creates one sniff, mekach ta'ut. Then I had the other sniff, if you have a yavam who's a mishumud, is there a zika? And that's a whole machlokes in the Goyim. It follows over into Rashi, Tosfos. So you have another sniff. So I was able to create a sveik sveika. But then we had a miracle. You know, when I got involved with this, when they came to me and they asked me to use all the contacts I had developed. Again, I don't want to talk about myself, but these are facts of life. My wife and I have a mitzvah that no one in this classroom has. We have a mitzvah of pigeon shvuyim, certified by the Mossad. The Erev Shabbos Pasha Toldot, 1985, I got a call from the boss, Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he told me, Rav Rakefet, Anachnu Matzdiim Lecha, we in the Mossad salute you, you pulled it off, you did it. The family you worked so hard for is going to get out. And I called Russia, they would pay you all these phone calls, I want money then. Call Russia, you know, you're on the phone, the operator from here who connected you, the operator there, the family, the KGB is listening at that end, the Mossad is listening at this end. There's six different parties on the phone, and you can actually hear them breathing. It's when I was finished, the operator from here asked me if there was good news. I said, he doesn't know that there's good news. She said, Al Tidad, it's going to be good. And she comforted me because I was very upset, but it all turned out absolutely within a few weeks. It worked out perfectly. So I had made connections with the American government, with the State Department, with people who had influence. So they came to me to use these connections to try to get the lady into Russia, to get Chalitza, to be able to come back to Israel. And believe it or not, by the time the process was finished, and I couldn't get her in, and I had the tshuvat of my thinking from Rav Ovadia, and I got two other people to actually spoke about, Rav Shal Yisraeli, Rav Shalom Mashash, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha. At that moment, the gate started crumbling. She went into Russia. She gave the guy $1,000, which was no big sum already in the Israeli money, and he didn't know what to do for her. Gave her chalitza, danced around her, pleaded with her for a visa to invite him to live in Israel. Suddenly the communism is gone, the kolchoz is gone. But on one hand, I'm a melamed zchut. I feel for Zikui Get. I feel for Yedei Shliach. I understand the tragedy. On the other hand, the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha. I can't break with the Halacha. I can't be Mechalel Shabbos, etc., etc. Okay. By the way, in the State of Israel, let me just add in one more postscript. We have solved the problem 99%. And there was just an addendum to the solution a few weeks ago. Do you know what I'm talking about? In Israel, if the Beit Din says you have to give a get, you don't give a get, they can take away all your privileges, but then they can throw you into jail. No, a guy gets thrown into jail. I said, you know, some people go to jail, they're the happiest people in the world. Three meals, you understand? There's a lot of literature on people who come out of jail who do a crime just to go back to jail. They become dependent. They're the happiest people in the world. No wife, no responsibilities. So, the Knesset, a few years ago, my daughter testified. This was a big case. The Knesset introduced the law that an Av Beit Din can throw a prisoner into solitary confinement. Until then, only a high-ranking officer in the Shabbos, in the Sherut Bitachon, the Soha, whatever it's called, Shabbos, I think I have it right. Now, an Av Beit Din. But then you have other characters. So by the way, there were two guys in jail, thrown into a solitary. One gave a get within 24 hours, and one gave a get within 36 hours. The one who gave the get, it took 36 hours, I'm told, was a Taimani. And if you know the Yemenites, they're very stubborn, they're very strong. That's the way they survived and remained good Jews in Yemen. And he took 36 hours. Now, there's another problem. You throw a guy into jail. In the jail, they have divisions that are like a yeshiva. You wake up, there's 3 minyanim a day. They learn daf yomi. They have shayurim, glat kosher, the works. So a guy doesn't want to give his wife a get, but he has a long beard and payas. He says, I want to be in the yeshiva where Derry was. Just the Knesset passed the law. If you're in jail for refusing to give your wife a get, you cannot be in the yeshiva divisions of the jailing system. That law just passed a few weeks ago. Okay, now into England. England, tremendous machlokah broke out in modern times. Everyone knows the Mishkanot Yaakov, everyone knows the Beit Ephraim, and the problems, Sadin the Arachadhu, the problems are the same. Now, when this machlokah broke out, it got very, very deep in London with Rabbi Monkshul, and families divided, and the stories are legendary, frightening, although by now it's quieted down. So they brought in, after Rav Shimon Ida died, they brought in the Eidah Charedit from Yerushalayim, the people who take care of the Erev here. And you know, we have to understand something, as hard as it is for us to digest this at times, and I've said this 1,000 times over, I'll talk about myself. I wear a kippah shruga. I'm a religious Zionist. I'm not ashamed to say I'm a religious Zionist. I'm a Talmud of Rav Mori, Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. I'm not ashamed to say that. I say it proudly. I was a little bit influenced by Rav Kook, by others, by Rav Neria, by Rav Abadi Yosef. All right, there's many influences upon me. But we cannot break with the Torah world. In other words, we can't do Shabbat for ourselves. There's a whole Torah world out there. They're Gerei Hasidim, and they're Belze Hasidim, and they're Litvisha. And that is part of my world. And it's very important in Pesach, even if you're going to paskin a little differently at times, but it has to be something which you can argue halachically 100%. And this is why they brought in the Eidah Charedit people, the Yerushalayim people, because when you look at their faces, Professor Levitz, Irvin Levitz, Yisrael Levitz, I grew up with him, his mother was really observant, and you know, to be observant in the Bronx in those years, the 30s into the 40s, required tremendous strength. So I believe I told you, I once showed her, I have two pictures in my wallet, one of the Rabbarim Kotler and one of the Satmaruv. And she looks at the pictures and she says to me, how can you compare Rabbi Kotler to the Satmaruv? Look how long his beard is, look how pious he looks. So you see, when you see the pictures of the people that put up the Erev, you are going to say, wow, these people, how can they do anything wrong? Now, the booklet that was published, and Shmuley said to me, was a public relations booklet. Absolutely. When the machloket broke out, I was told a certain Jew put up all the money to come out with a very glossy, beautiful book to show that the Erev is a legitimate Erev. You don't want to accept it? Fine. But the Erev is legitimate. The book is very valuable because forgetting about the pictures and forgetting about all the praiseworthy announcements and statements about what they did, it has halacha in it. And the halacha is very, very fascinating. And in the book, they stress we did things. We took the biggest tefach whenever we measured a fence. Every fence was made to be solid. Very little letzirat hapetach was used, and all the chumras. But now we come to an interesting question, and it shows you when Chazal said satmer the arachadhu, that the same problems we have in America, here you have it in England. And I'll ask Shmuley to help me to verify what I'm about to say. In America, you take Flatbush, what is your biggest problem? And we discussed it with Dr. Aaron Price, Professor Aaron Price, Ocean Parkway. In Queens, what is your biggest problem? You have tremendous highways. And by the way, I don't think anything equals Queens Boulevard. Queens Boulevard is 12 lanes. 2 local, 3 express, 3 express, 2 local. Anyone here from Queens can verify what I just said? I haven't seen Queens Boulevard for a while, but that's as I recall it. Queens Boulevard has 2 local. When one, they may be parked on the side, but they're 2 lanes. Two lanes are open.
No,
okay, but say that doesn't...
It's 3 lanes, it's 3 lanes, 2 parking, one driving, and then it's 6.
Say that it's the biggest parkway I know. It's Ocean Parkway that has 3, and then it has an embankment, and then it has... the local lane. Okay, these are tremendous. Now the whole question is this a Rishuta Rabban D'Oraita? Is it a straight line? Does it curve? Sratra Platra? Everything involved? And do 600,000 people travel on it? And what's interesting is Reb Moishes depended upon Dr. Aaron Price that 600,000 people traverse Ocean Parkway daily. Others said this is impossible, cannot be. Now in London, the North Circular Road, as I recall, the North Circular Road divides Golders Green from Hendon, and it also is a tremendous highway, cars shooting by the thousands, if not tens of thousands. I remember when we crossed over from Golders Green to Hendon, we walked across a bridge, and I was told that that bridge was built because people were getting killed trying to dot cars. Years ago, they had to build the bridge because it became as cars, you know, you're living in a world today where every family has 2-3 cars, even in Yerushalayim. It's unbelievable how many cars you see and families in the same family, 1, 2. When I came in Aliyah, no one had a car, few and far between. Anglos had cars, they were looked upon as multimillionaires that you had a car. Today, every kid already in his 20s is driving around. Okay, now, so you'll ask a simple question. What's the problem? Build an area for Hendon and build an area for Golders Green. Now, let me tell you my impression, and Shmuley, you correct me if I'm wrong. In America, you can say the Erev is not continuous from Kew Gardens Hills to Forest Hills, right? The highways, I think there are 3 different highways there, and it's a whole tremendous complex. Fine. Forest Hills and Kew Gardens Hills, each one is a city unto itself. American Orthodoxy, you're talking large. It's not Israel. I don't say Forest Hills or Kew Gardens Hills comes anywhere near North Jerusalem, just to use one example. You look at North Jerusalem all the way from the main highway, Highway 1, all the way to Ramat Eshkol and beyond. Every last person there is klapei chutz, a shemesh Shabbos. I don't go into the hearts. I don't know whether they're monkeys putting on tefillin or they're really good Jews. That's a different story. But you're talking about hundreds of thousands of Shomrei Torah mitzvot. My wife once looked in an apartment there for our daughter years and years ago. They were building near Center One. And the guy told my wife right away, this is not for you. We can't sell to you. This is only for Haredim. Does your son-in-law have a beard, etc., etc.? Okay? So, but Kew Gardens Hills, all right. It's a big area. At the end of the area is Lander College. Chafetz Chaim High School, right near Lander College. Forest Hills was an Ir Ve'Ein B'Yisrael at one time, then it went off the map, and then the Russian emigres put it back on the map again. In London, with all due respects to Shmuley, gold is green and Hendon are, by our standards, American standards, not talking Israeli standards, it doesn't even enter the ballpark, are two very small areas. If I'm correct, I can walk on Golders Green Road all the way into Hendon from the start of Golders Green into Hendon. I can walk it in 20 minutes. Am I right? 20 minutes. 20 minutes. I walked it. I saw. So to build an Erev and these two communities interlock. It's not two separate communities. It interlocks. People walk from Hendon to Davin and Golders Green. People walk from Golders Green to Hendon. You have Haredim on both sides of the tracks. You have modern Orthodox so-called religious Zionists on both sides of the tracks. You have Litvisha, you have Palisha, you have Ungarisha, you have the Germans. It's a very mixed community. And the whole concept of building an Erev, if you're going to get off the floor, it has to include both communities. So you see, the North Circular Road became the heart of the controversy. Okay, now, what did people claim? People claimed 600,000 people are going through the North Circular Road on a daily basis. And if that's the case, it is Reshut HaRabim the Oraita, and you cannot use Tzurat HaPetach. The whole area has to be fenced in properly. And this is the question that the Rabbanim from the Eidah Charedit are being asked. And they answer, first of all, one should be aware that it is absolutely clear that 600,000 people, cars, do not pass through the North Circular section within the Erev. The number of cars using the North Circular has been checked many times, and the number of people using the North Circular falls far short of 600,000 per day. What they say, even if we take the more machmir opinion and we include all the cars of the North Circular, both inside and outside the Erev, in the view of the Chazon Ish, and we always will come back to the Chazon Ish, the North Circular cannot be considered a Reshut HaRabim, since Omed Merubah HaParetz on all four sides. And what is he referring to? Because you have buildings. As you drive down, you're not driving in a wilderness. Envision Ocean Parkway. The North Circular Road is like Ocean Parkway, like Queens Boulevard. Ocean Parkway, I don't know one area where you find an opening. That's unbelievable, valuable real estate. The Sfadim will buy up any lot, knock down the house, and put up a beautiful building. Only the Ashkenazim suffer. Who knows what I'm talking about? No? Who knows? Mir Yeshiva. Can anyone tell me what I'm referring to? The famous Mir Yeshiva wanted to build another two flights. Now, what do you see on Ocean Parkway? It's an eyesore. I've seen it now for over 20 years. It's an eyesore. The shell, the frame, the metal is up. There was never money to finish the building. So on top of the Mir Yeshiva, there's a basketball court where the students play basketball and use it as a gym. It's out in the open when it's not raining. They're never finished. Outside of that, it's the only wreck I know of, and even there, the building is way more than 10 tefachim high. What is it? Two stories. It's called the Morgenstern Building. He built it. He gave money to YU as well. He was a frum Jew. And Ocean Parkway, Omed Meruba Al HaParetz. Once that's the case, then you can use an Erev, when at times you can use Tzuret HaPetach. Now, he also alludes to the other point we made many, many weeks ago, Zev. What do you mean, the cars, 600,000 people? They're not walking. They're in cars. Every car is more than 10 tfachim. It has to be more than 10 tfachim because you're sitting in it, right or wrong. My cars measure way more than 10 tfachim. Well, the car is a reshut hayachid. It's a reshut unto itself. What does this have to do with 600,000 people walking in the midbar? And in addition, the Jews from Yerushalayim cite the example of Yerushalayim. And there's a letter from Al-Yadashiv where this point is made. How do you have an Erev in Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim today has on to 1 million people. You have more than 600,000 people walking the streets on Shabbos. Look what goes on here. People don't use cars. You really have 600,000 walking the streets. Here, a little demonstration. In the tip of Rehavia, there were thousands. I couldn't believe the crowd. Couldn't believe it. I'm used to crowds. It was like the Kotel, mobbed. And I can assure you at the Kotel it was mobbed. And every shul is mobbed. And Baruch Hashem. But Yerushalayim, again, the Chazon Ish, Omeid Habeyote Mehaparutz. Take a look. Every little piece of land in Yerushalayim, you know what it's worth? Building on it. And because of the wealthy Anglos from America, from England, from South Africa, the wealthy French, some of the oligarchs from Russia, they buy our property and our kids can't live here. Who can afford Yerushalayim today? Certainly the heart of Yerushalayim. Wow. Take a look at the buildings near the King David. They're ghost cities. Look at the lights during the year. Kfar David, I guarantee you I'd be afraid to live there. It's deserted. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach. Wow, the place is alive. And as these Rabbanim say, and as Rav Yashiv says in the letter they produce, if you're not samach on the Chazon Ish, you can't build an Erev anywhere. And we're samach on the Chazon Ish. Then they deal with another problem. Watch. What do you mean you're samach on the Chazon Ish? Is this a bidyevet or a lachatchila? And let me explain myself. I told you I have a chumrah. I'll use an example from that just happened on Shabbos. The person who davens next to me in Ohel Rivka, Shabbos morning, 6:30 minyan, we only daven together 45, 46 years now. So I only know him since 1943. When I entered Solanta, he was a year ahead of me. He was a Bronx boy, Monty Nussbaum, and he was Menachem Nussbaum when he was Makabalni and taught me the ropes. He was president of the student council. I was vice president. I think the year later I was president. He taught me the ropes. So Menachem says to me, Ben Gavra Lagavra during Kriyat HaTorah, he says, Aaron, he says, I did a stupid thing Friday night. Tell me, was I stupid or not? He's invited to a home. Other people in the shul, very well-known people. I've actually taught members of that family. They're Israelis, but part of the family went to America, and I actually taught members over the years, both in the Kollel and both in BMT. So he asked them, where are the vegetables from? So they told him, we're samach on the Het HaMechira. So he and his wife didn't eat the vegetables, and he felt embarrassed. I said, not only did you embarrass them, but you transgressed the psak of Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the psak of Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, Reb Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. And he says, yeah, I know. And then we met the person he embarrassed. He was coming into the second minyan. We were going out from the first minyan. And he apologized. And I said, I just told him off. Sebeseder, kvar mati lo shehu shegetz gamur aval ha-psakim shel Rab. Now, I want to ask you a question. What does this story tell you? So someone doesn't want to be samach on the Het HaMechira. So lachatchila, he's not samach. B'diyeved, if you're invited to someone's home, you don't want to embarrass the hostess. The Rev told people, don't drive the housewife crazy, period. But you know, the Rav couldn't be samach. If you know the Netziv, if you know Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi, if you know the Briska Lamdis, the Hetna Mechira is very difficult for them to accept. But on the other hand, the Hetna Mechira is based upon a Gedolei Yisrael, Rabbi Yitzchok, Rabbi Yehoshua Trunk, Rabbi Shmuel Malava, and you're dealing with Shemitah B'zman Hazeh, which may only be a minhag, not even a din derabbanan. At the most, it's a din. We spoke about it already. I told you some of these people that maledict also a samach on the Hetna Mechira. I read in the Haredi press. I told you when I see them spilling out their whiskey before Pesach, I'll accept their maledictions. Until then, keep your mouth shut, you big amoritz. But what does it mean? It's a lachatchila and a bidiyavad. So a lot of people in London, how can you be samach on the Chazon Ish? That's a bidiyavad. It's not a lachatchila. All right. This is a very interesting question. And you know that the Mishnah Brura, we spoke about it last year, the Bi'ah Halacha, Bal Nefesh Shachmir. Okay, Bal Nefesh Shachmir. So the people in London, Shmuley's friends, Shmuley's colleagues, the whole atmosphere, the Rabbanim there, the Ungarische Rabbanim, Rabbi Chonan, right? Rabbi Chonan, they call him a very important Rav in Monkshul. What do we shkatzim? What do we have to be samachana b'diavad? So the Chazon Ish said, but that's only b'diavad, not lachatchila. And here they go into this question, and they cite sources that every last posek who knew the Chazon Ish said that this concept is mechubah. Umaruvach, they call him the Chazon Ish. Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who in his Sefer Shonei Halachot says that you can be somach on the Chazon Ish latchila. Rav Dov Landau, the Rosh Yeshiva of Slabatka Yeshiva and a Talmud Mufak of the Chazon Ish, told me personally that the Cheter of the Chazon Ish is to be used lachatchila. Not only that, the people from Meir Sharim who built the Erev, and they met with our friend Reb Menashe Klein, Reb Menashe HaKatan, the Ungvar Rav, and they asked him this very question. And Rabbi Menashe Klein answered, and they quote him, Rabbanim have no obligation to rule on what a Baal Nefesh should do. He knows himself how to conduct himself. And then he added, as a general rule, Baal Nefesh are not walking the streets of Manhattan. They are to be found in the Dalar Amat Shel Halacha. And that was Rabbi Menashe Klein's answer. Now that's an interesting answer. But it doesn't solve the problem when your wife is screaming and yelling. She has twins that are driving her crazy in the house. When she doesn't get them out to the park, she's going to lose her mind. So even there, a Baal Nefesh, he can sit with Dalat Lamot Shel Halacha. That is true. The Chazon Ish was supported by his wife. You all know the Mishnah Brura. His wife ran a grocery. All right, at times he helped her and he would shut the store when they made enough money for the day. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they would shut the store. But a person can sit and learn, be supported. You fellas are lucky, you're in a kollel. I trust you're supported by Yeshiva University, which has terrible problems today. That's you heard what happened. Montefiore, you heard what happened? An atom bomb fell. I just interrupt for 1 second. Because now I understand that I was speaking with a member, Isaac, I'll tell it. I was speaking with a member of the Board of Trustees of Yeshiva 2 Sundays ago, and he tells me, I'm furious at YU. I said, why are you so upset with YU? What happened? He tells me, they negotiate with Montefiore, they send rabbis to negotiate instead of businessmen. So I didn't know what he was talking about. It turns out that the deal with Montefiore to take over Einstein, which would have halved the yeshiva's budget, the negotiations. It was not a fait accompli. Why, you announced it like a fait accompli last May, I believe it was. And the negotiations fell through, and YU has now this tremendous budget to meet again, and Moody's downgraded YU's credit rating to negative, which those of you who are intelligent Syrian businessmen will understand what that means, if we have any here. I can't. Isaac, you're not, you're from, where are you from? You're Syrian, so you know what I'm saying. The Ashkenazim don't learn this until they're over 30. But the Syrians, I mean, my Syrian Talmidim, they were 20, 19, they were so smart when it came to business, because it's in their blood. Do you understand? They absorb it by osmosis, as the Rav used to say. The Rav said, I never learned, I quote Rav here, I never learned Yeridei with my father. I absorbed it by osmosis. So you know what it means to have a negative rating? It means anytime you have to borrow money, your interest, everything you have costs you more. So YU has problems today. So thank God the kollel continues. And now I understand something else. When the Shechtas came in, when Rabbi and Mrs. Shechta came in, so Mrs. Shechta Shoshana, her first question to me was, do you feel the budget cuts here? I said, nothing has changed. We haven't gotten a raise in 10 years already, so we're not getting a raise this year. I said, Baruch Hashem, we're able to teach. That's not the problem. I said, I don't feel it. Yeah, the building is falling apart. That's true. I'd like to resuscitate Mr. Gris and walk with him through the building like we did in the old days. You would see how this building would be fixed up within a week. But all right, the building needs a painting, the hallways, etc. Marble is chipped, marble falling. But Baruch Hashem, the elevator works, and the students are smiling. So I told her, I don't feel any difference, but now I understand what they're saying. And now I understand they took people who worked in registering students and moved them into fundraising, and women took over the registration of students. Men, women, what's the difference? They can register anyone. And in Torah.org, the young man running it, who sits next to me, his office is next to mine, he told me he's getting tremendous pressure. How do we raise money? How do we raise money through YUTorah.org? So I gave him a simple answer. I said, take your most popular people on the website and you run a picture. Run a picture of Heschel Shechta. This man has great influence, his hashkafa, his outlook. And describe him, describe his outlook. And if you agree with him, support us so that we can continue to utilize his Torah.
We need to have the market.
Marking. I understand
that. You quoted the Gemara that when you go to buy something, you have to look for a Lawrence who's a businessman.
Right. Well, the Gemara says when you go to take out a lady, take an Amoritz with you. But the Gemara says, Rebbe Yomacham, I have a lot to say, it's not for now. But I gave him the idea. So take Rakhefet and you say, here's a man who has devoted his life to spreading the teachings of the Rav. If you agree with this, support. Go right down the line. Turk the Mashpia. We now have a Hasidic presence. Here is a man who's capable of teaching Tanya and inspiring the students. And those Kitvei Harav Kook. If you agree, support. Okay, anyone listening? You just heard an appeal for YUTorah.org. All right, let's come back here. But what a fabulous question. Can you be Somach? In other words, how do you look? How do you look at a person? How do you look? Yomo. Here I describe Monty Nussbaum. He looked down upon Shlomo Eitan. Eisenman is the name they use in America, the Hebrewized version. You know, Rabbi Ronnie Eisenman is his cousin. Or nephew, no, cousin, I believe. So he's my Talmud. So how do you look upon him? So, all right. Rakefet is samachan de heta, Reuben is samachan de heta. Ah, that's a bidiyavad. That's not lachatchila. How do you look upon them? You understand? So now with the Erev, how do you look upon someone who's samach on the Erev? According to these Gedolei Yisrael, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky, you should know, has a lot of common sense. The Steinplan of his father, Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael, a lot of common sense. Lachatchila, this is not a bidi evet. Okay. Let Let me go a jump further. So you see, this book, you're right, it's public relations, but it opens your eyes how you build an Erev, what kind of Erev they built. By the time you're done with this book, you reach the conclusion it may be the best Erev in the world, of any city, over 1 million people. You follow? That's fabulous. By the way, I plead with you, we must have 1 million tonight. So, Zev, don't let any, when it get 10 people, 11 people, keep them here. You have the name Kahana, JDL, keep them here. Okay, now, then they ask these Rabbanim, what kind of Hidurim do you have? So, very interesting. All the Mechitzat that they used touch the ground. Now, you should know there's a lot of literature on this. When you build a sukkah, if you have a mechitza that's within 3 tfachim of the ground, we say lavud. But of course, there's a different problem. If the mechitza shakes in the wind and a goat can crawl in underneath it, it passes out that type of mechitza. They say every mechitza we have is fully attached to the ground. We have no Mechitza Tluya. We inspected every one of the Mechitzot meticulously to make sure that none were not fully attached to the ground. Not only that, where do you have the Mechitzot? Remember, an Erev has to be checked. Minhag Yisrael is that every Thursday, wherever there is an Erev, there is a Vod that checks the Erev. That's the story with the Rebbe that we've mentioned so many times, that he wouldn't carry because of the Mishkan of Yaakov, but he made the 2 kopecks for checking the Erev for his father on Thursday. So what do you say? You're checking an Erev. Sometimes where the wall is, you can't even get in. There are houses there, that's private property, no one will let you in. You want to check, you have to see. The wires are behind this shikun. How do you get in? We also made sure that the mechitzot are all easily accessible so that they can be easily checked without mashkichim having to enter private property to do so. We also never used hedges or shrubbery as part of a mechitza. Neither did we rely upon tel hamitlakeit. You follow? These are all questions in halacha. Can you use shrubbery? What about a tel mitlakeit, which you certainly can use, but you have to be able to measure it. How do you know it remains in that position? How do you know it remains in that height? A lot of times you have these tel mitlakeit going into the ocean, going into the sea, and it can be washed away. And we never used it. Every mechitza is made of solid material. And we even put up new fences in place of old fences, even when the old ones could still be used for the time being. Many of these hiturim mentioned are found only in the London Erev. Now, then they get involved in a tremendous problem, which interestingly, and I'll give you sources today, next week, didn't come up in the United States. And that is the problem of Karfifot, if I'm pronouncing it properly. I'll show you later. I was raised to pronounce it Karpaf. I see, I'll show you from Jastro, Karpif, Karpipot. I don't know exactly Karfifot. How would you say it in plural? And this is a new concept whatsoever that we have never touched upon before. It's amazing, because with all that was written in America, this problem was pushed to the back burner. We'll see why. Now, in England, they use a word that I never heard of in this context in American English, an allotment. What does it mean by an allotment? Do you know the word, Shmuley? Allotment. It's a technical word for land that was given by the government and with strictures. It's to be used, for the sake of argument, to raise vegetables. In other words, you can't build on it. You can't build residence on it. Now, you'll see from the Gemara, if you have a karpaf or a kapif, again, don't be misled by the way I'm pronouncing it, but in my youth, the few times I heard the term used, they used the word karpaf. If you have an allotment, we can call it, if it's a large allotment, and I'll I'll give you what it amounts to in our terminology. If it's a large allotment, it's mevatel the Erev. The Erev basically can only be built if it's an area that is to be occupied by humans, by residential uses. If it's a large area that cannot be used as residential usage, buildings, homes, etc., it's mevatel the Erev. The only way you can build an Erev is if you enclose the karpaf with its own fence, and that keeps it out of the general Erev. Now, the question is why? What is this halacha? And I'll show you, it's an esoteric Rashi, but this is one of the basic reasons given, that if people will see a very large open area and they'll see you carrying in it, they'll start to think you can carry in a reshut haratam. Because a large open area, which probably is a kamalit, not more, but it's like Diglei HaMidbar, it's wide open, it's large, and suddenly you're carrying on Shabbat, people will be confused. You can carry in a kamalit, you can carry in a reshut harabim. So it seems to be a gezeirat chachamim that this cannot be part of the Erev, and you have to build a separate wall around it. And I'll show you a picture in a minute. Hold on 1 second.
The term you really want to use for Americans.
Right.
It's zoned.
An allotment, but I gather when they use the word allotment, it means the government gave it to you on this condition. But maybe I'm wrong. When we say allotment in English, in American English, it means a gift given to you under certain conditions, an allotment. But you're saying zoned. Fine.
You can have a tract of land that's zoned by
fine.
Agriculture.
Right.
You can build a building on it.
Right, you had that in Israel where you know if you bought a piece of land, farmland, in 1930 in Petah Tikva, and that became zoned, it's the center of the city now, you paid $100 1935 money, and in 2005 or 2015 you got $2 million for that little plot of land which they're going to build a 10-story building on. Okay, so zoning can be changed, but we're talking about where it's zoned, and it's zoned, it cannot be built on. So they ask him the question, are there kafifot in the London Erev? There are no kafifot in the Erev. We took special care to make sure that all the allotments are surrounded by solid mechitzah in the most muhuda way. And in this matter, we follow exactly the same principles as in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. And at the end of their interview with the Beit Din, we parted with brachat of shalom and with the fervent hope that this Erev Mechuda will enhance the Kedushat HaShabbat in London and bring peace and tranquility to its citizens and its residents. So there I'll agree with Shmuley, that's pure public relations. Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom B'Olam. And you know, Rabbi, it's attributed to Professor Shaul Liebman. He said, you can prove that Chazal had a sense of humor, because Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom B'Olam put two Talmidei Chachamim into one room, and you'll soon hear the machleket that will break out.
In New York, in Manhattan, the Central Park,
Okay, so
the time is.
Excuse me.
Central Park is.
is, I'll explain it, ask the question when we come to America. It's too early to ask that question.
But it's right here.
Right, right, it's the same question, absolutely. But first I want to give you... you'll see... Rabbi Asher Weiss, we'll get to Rabbi Asher Weiss, you'll see. He solves all the problems of Kapaf, you'll see.
It was all, it's all zoned.
Right, no, I understand. That's a good question. And there was all I can tell you is there was a lot of machloket over Central Park, and they put it into the Arab and yesham milismol. But let me go shlav. I want to give you sources. I don't want it to be a Torah Shabbat Peah. I want to give you the Torah Shabbat Tavkan. Now, there's a beautiful volume which I quoted before, The Contemporary Arab by Rabbi Yosef Gavriel Berchafer. By the way, his relative comes to Shia tomorrow. Dr. Charlie Hexter is related to Berchafer, I believe, by marriage. I think Berchafer is married to... I think his father is married to Charlie's sister, Masha Hukazev. So this volume, which came out by Feldheim, and The Disappearing Halacha of Kapfifot. Several years ago, during a routine tour of an Erev located in a coastal community, it was discovered that the Erev encompassed a large saltwater inlet. This inlet had previously gone unnoticed because a thicket of reeds surrounded it. Examinations of other thickets in the area revealed that some of them were in reality marshes. These proved impassable, even by local youth equipped with machetes for the specific purpose of trying to transverse these thickets. The problem that arisen was the obscure halacha of Kapaf. And now let me put it into halachic terminology. Any allotment, any land that is not zoned, Eina mukaf ledira. That is the halachic terminology. Eina mukaf ledira. When the land cannot be used to build habitations. And if this is the case, it's not just a garden. It's not just an orchard. Here you have marshes. Humans can't walk there. You can't get through. What about parks where there's endless grass and wild grass and flowers growing and the examples are endless. And if this is the case, you have a lodge, we call an area Kapaf, if a Kapaf is larger than 5,000 square amot. 5,000. Could you imagine? It is parcels, the entire Erev. The Poskim extended the definition of human habitation to include any use of the area in question for human needs. Okay, we're now starting to see. Mukaf ledira does not just mean habitation. It means an area where humans can walk, can go. Could be if there's vegetation, if it's planted, if there's seeds in the ground. It's no good because humans can't go there. But what about if it's flowers, a botanical garden, and you can walk up and down and you can enjoy it? What about it's a park? You can sit in the park, you can talk. You can picnic, hot day, summer, breeze in Central Park. Rafi leads a group of NCSY people. They picnic in the park. All right, they can't have hot chalent, but Baruch Hashem, Lechem Mishnah, good corned beef, fabulous potato chips, right or wrong? Picnic. Man, what if there are restaurants in the park? Yitzchak, you start to see the answer to Central Park? So you see where there are marshes, that's really a problem. And that has to be surrounded by a wall. By the way, Rabbi Riskin and Efrat, his Erev, wherever there is a, what might qualify as a karpath, it is surrounded by a fence of ten tvachim, not to interfere with the Erev. But what do you do in a big city? Ein mukaf l'dira. But the poskim, and he gives fabulous footnotes here. You can check it out. Yes, Moshe.
Tavern on the Green closed.
It closed? I don't know.
No, it did.
It did. So you're trying to say the restaurant is gone.
There's another one.
So beside
I think they closed it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because people going to Central Park, it's traversed, it's enjoyed, people sit, people talk, people meet. It's not isolated, Central Park. You're not dealing with where something where you can't walk through it because it's totally covered by Zraim. You follow? Yes.
About lakes or ponds, large ponds or
if you kaka had very large, then you would have to build a fence around it. But then again, you may have a different solution because it could be that the incline is deep enough that itself is the wall.
The reservoir is basically.
Right, no, the reservoir, all reservoirs are surrounded to keep people from spoiling the water. I mean, it's a total reshitayach, totally separate, totally blocked off, that there are reasons why.
Most of them are blocked off.
Right, you should know something. From a point of view of security, every country in the world, a modern country where you have a water supply system, how do you protect that against enemies who would like to drop a little poison in? You follow me? You have no idea how much security there is involved in that level in the state of Israel, for instance, that has never publicized. But you have to be alert and awake because that's a very easy solution for lo aleinu, the world in which we live. You know that all bottles today, why are all these bottles sealed? Why are all medicines sealed? You know how many incidents there have been of people in America, remember, people putting poison in, opening up a jar of mustard?
The bottle doesn't pop. Bottle pops, you shouldn't use
it. Right now, there were cases in soup, you know, powdered soup, which they put poison into. What people will do, people who are enemies, people who are insane, mental illness, you have no idea what's involved. Security, but here they extend it to include any use of dairy in question for human needs. This would include parks and other areas suitable for walking or strolling, but not planted fields unless there are walking paths between the furrows. Okay? And you, I don't want to bore you. You look in. Unbelievable salts, unbelievable sources. The Divrei Malkiel, this is Rav Malkiel Tenenbaum, was a posek mufak in Poland over 100 years ago. And others ruled that if an Erev was built around an area that contained a pre-existing karpav, then the hekefla dira, the act of the purpose of enhancing human habitation of the Erev enclosure, contradicts the Einu Kavla Dira of the Karpath. Such an Erev is therefore valid. And you see, this becomes a tremendous source lahakel. Although lachatchila, we try not to be samach on it, but what the Divrei Malkiel is saying makes a lot of sense. When the Erev is built after the allotments and the zoning and everything is in place, then that Erev ipsa facta turns it into mukaf l'dira. Because why are you building it? So people should be able to walk and carry, and it's human habitation, it's human life, it's an expression of human endeavor. Very powerful, very powerful. But you start to see how the karpath problem is solved. If it's a total marsh, you must build a fence around it. But if you can walk through, humans can enjoy it. Humans can have benefit from it. It's mukaf l'dira. And halacha kama v'kama when the Erev came after it already existed. Yes, yes, sir.
It means that the term kapaf does not mean, though it's broadened, that it's not just an area that excluding, it's not zoned for building. It's an area isolated.
Right, right. The term kapaf is limited. Not you used the word, it's not enlarged, it's diminished.
Right.
In other words, to be a real kapaf, it is very hard to come across a kapaf.
It's inaccessible.
In a modern city. And we're going to talk with examples.
Like in central London, when you're in Wilkes Park.
Right.
People are there.
Right. I have pictures. Right. I went to Google. A student helped me. Who helped me? Maybe last year I was preparing these lectures. So you'll see. I have a map of Golden Skills. You'll see. We'll get there next week. Yeah, you'll see where the big machlokes was, what they carried on. Now, and finally, let me show you one more source today. This is also a sefer I quoted last year. Elimelech Langer. Elimelech Langer, in my time, he grew up, I think, even in Givat Mordechai. He studied him, a big Talmud Chacham. He went to Machon Lev. I think they told me he became a lawyer afterwards. He went to Karim Biafna. I remember he was a big Talmud Chacham. And I remember people were very upset that he didn't remarry a Rosh Yeshiva, etc. He published a wonderful sefer, Hilchat Deiruvim, by Elimelech Langer. And he too discusses the problem of Karpaf, and he shows you Eich L'Takenitza. Can you see the picture? Here is a Sadez Ruah. You can't walk in it. So you have to fence it off. A fence within the major Erev that is surrounding the entire area. And he says, V'cheinim yesh b'shetach hamukaf shetach zarua ha'gadol mi'beit satayim afim hum mi'ut shel ha'shetach hamukaf. Even though it's a minority of the entire enclosed area, nevertheless, Asur letaltal bo umemele nesah titul b'kol hashetach. And therefore, if you have a situation like this, and it's more than beis hatayim, and you, in order letaltel the titul in the area surrounded around it, you must surround the sadeh hazruah b'mechitzot nifradot, and show that it is a separate area. And he explains, how does it work? Barua sheyia asur letaltel b'shetach hapanimi, in the sadeh hazrua atzma, in the enlightened allotment itself, shaharehi eina mukefet l'shem dira. But the area around it is mukefet l'shem dira. People live there, and the kapaf, with its own fence around it, will not parcel the greater area around it. Okay, so we have a lot more to do with kapaf, but we've started. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. Next week, next Sunday, Monday, there's no shiurim, Chanukah, right? Believe it or not, the year is flying.
Even Monday morning, there's no class.
No, class is off. There's no class. The boys are on vacation. I guess the idea is that Noah is going to be traveling, and they don't want him to rush back and lose his health. So no class Sunday. There is a tradition. They always give off 2 days for Hanukkah. And all the shirm are early, I understand, right? The shirm are moved up because of candle lighting. What, there's no shirm at night, I would imagine. And what is Tuesday night? There's a chagigah. Noah, what's the program of the chagigah? Tell me.
I think it's a concert.
Are there going to be speeches or a concert?
I think it should be a concert.
If it's a concert, maybe I can come.
We could arrange for a speech.
No. I don't want speeches. Just I can speak. That's a different story. No, I want the concert. I was at an 80th birthday party last Thursday night, which is a joy because we have so much death around us. We're at this table with people we know for decades, and everyone gets excited. Are you going to speak? I wasn't asked to speak. But if they'll ask me to speak, I'll speak. So the dentist next to me says, "Wow, how is it so easy for you?" I say, "Tell me, if someone shows you his mouth and you look into it, you tell him this is wrong, that's wrong, how come it's so easy?" I say, "Don't get impressed. Baruch Hashem, my life is teaching, Baruch Hashem." Anyway, they didn't ask me to speak. The family spoke, but they had a guy there, Howie Kahn, who put on Shlomo Carbach's tunes and Broadway shows. "You ain't nothing but a hound dog." Everything I spoke about in class a few weeks ago. We live in two worlds, and we have to know how to balance it out. And I have to tell you, I enjoyed Carbach, and I enjoyed the Broadway shows. It brought back many, many memories. And then we got involved with "You Ain't Nothing But a Hound Dog," because believe it or not, Rafi, are you listening or not? Let me see a smile on your face. Tell Shashi you got to smile more. And the guy, Howie Kahn, knew the Fruchter family. Rabbi Fruchter was the two-story building that Presley grew up in. One story was Presley, and one story was the Fruchters. And he met the family when he toured the United States, and they asked him, "Are the Fruchters had five children?" He said, "Well, the parents are no longer alive, but all the children are doing well." And Ein Hachinami, Elvis Presley, halachically, was Jewish, confirmed, 100%. And now the problem is, how did they use him for a Shabbos guy? To reiterate, what did we do today? Baruch Hashem, we handled London, we handled the pamphlet, the publicity, the gauntlet of the London Erev, and we started the problem which haunts London and becomes a tremendous machloket. You'll see why when I show you the map. And we have to finish out America. And let me tell you, these are very fascinating and interesting topics. Now, tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hanotel Yov Koach, I'm finishing out Rav David Lifshitz. You have no idea the reaction around the world to last Monday. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I could pull it off, as they say. I just sent Professor Waxman some of the emails we got here, and he got endless phone calls, so Baruch Hashem. And then I want to finish off Rav Shmuel Belkin, and I want to deal with Mori Rebbe's Hespet for Rav Shmuel Belkin. And then I want to deal with one more figure that Reb Belkin brought into the yeshiva, Mori Rebbe Musa, Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson. And from there we sail into Chassidut, what happened in America, why kids were thrown out of Torah Vadas for being Chassidim. Michael, you don't believe your ears, but I will prove it to you 100%. And then we sail into the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which probably take us the rest of the year, because the man accomplished, have to understand who he was and what he accomplished. Wow. Now, the freebies are all in honor of Yud Tet Kislev. Why you students at the Rebbe's resting place? How Chabad views the stabbing in Chabad last week by, it's a miracle they had cameras photographing it, recording it, because could you imagine what would go on in America? Black men killed by white Hasidic Jews. Instead, Baruch Hashem, everyone understands, he was mentally deranged, and just the opposite. Chabad got many compliments from Goyim. Look how wonderful these Jews are. They were pleading with the police, not the sheep. They were pleading, "Man, give yourself up." They didn't want to see him injured or killed as he was. Naftali Bennett speaks to Chabad in Washington, and they're blown away. If this man becomes prime minister, Rakefet is going to dance a kazatska on Rehov Aza. New York Times, you won't believe this. See if we have a minion. See if we have a minion. Yeah, okay. We have. Okay. New York Times, you won't believe this with the picture and everything. New York Times recommends, when you're bored on Sunday, visit the Yohel of the Rebbe. And this is sad news. The young rabbi, Rabbi Rifkin, passed away from St. Louis. He was the Rabbi Ben Sion Rifkin. He was the chief rabbi. His father just died of Shalom. He was in just 56 years of age. These were Lubavitcher Chassidim. And finally, the battle over the T-neck menorah. Chabad, when they first wanted to put a menorah up, what went on in T-neck. Gentlemen, enjoy. 1 second, Moshe, you'll say, who can daven for the Yom?